Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuck sticks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Clearly, I'm not at home. You can probably hear the difference, I would imagine. Are you okay? It's Memorial Day. I hope you're taking it easy. Maybe say a prayer, have a few memories, pay a little respect to the people that do the service, dedicated their lives to this country, eat some good food. Don't get into political arguments with family members. Don't burn the burgers or fuck up the ribs or overcook the salmon. Look, if you're trying to grill onions on that thing and they fall into the coals, just let it burn out. Don't freak out. Don't lose your shit at the grill. All right. That's all I'm saying, because as you know, and as I know, if you're losing your shit at the grill, it's probably about something else. Oh, by the way, Timothy Oliphant is on the show today. You know him from Deadwood, Justified. But he came over, and yeah, he was wearing a hat. You know, sometimes you wonder about these stars of things where they wear hats. Does he wear a hat all the time? He did wear a hat when he came over. So why am I doing this right now? Why am I sitting upstairs in a room at Comedy on State in Madison, Wisconsin, in a sort of panic in between shows, recording my podcast? I'll tell you why. Here's the deal. Here's how this works. I would have brought my equipment, but I didn't want to bring my equipment because I was going to be back yesterday on Sunday, but the only direct flight flies out of Madison at like 3:20 in the afternoon. Too many things in between me in Madison and me sitting at the mics in Los Angeles, and I panicked, even though Brendan was like, it'll be fine, you know, I'll be up. And I'm like, I don't know, man. It's one plane, one shot at getting out. What if I don't get out? Then I'm going to have to scramble and find somebody with equipment, go to a radio station, you know, and stay here an extra night. That, you know, it was just, this is the problem with my imagination, folks. It's an ongoing issue, all right? Like, why can't I just think of good things? Why does it always be so thoroughly specific when I'm filled with dread and panic? Why? But that being said, I've been here in Madison for a few days. The shows have been amazing. This is by far one of the best comedy clubs in the country. Dina Hashem opened for me. She was amazing. She flew in from New York. And today, it's Saturday that I'm recording this. I just got done doing an episode, today's episode, if you want to go find it. It was pretty funny. Doug Loves Movies, Doug Benson Show. I get this DM on Twitter from Benson. Hey, I'm going to be in Madison doing my show at 4:30 in the afternoon on Saturday. Do you want to do it? Like, he must know. Like, he must know when he's going to places where he's got people that can do the show. What? How am I going to turn the guy down? What am I going to say? I'm busy at 4:30 in the afternoon on Saturday in Madison. I'm just, that's a bad time for me. Fucking, of course. Of course I'm going to do the show. And it was fun. It was funny. And I'm no good at those games, but we did the show. And it's been good here, man. It's good. It's been good in Madison. It's a weird thing to be in towns, you know, where I've had a little bit more free space in my mind lately. I'm reading this amazing book that's blowing my mind. I finished Fantasyland, and now I'm reading an advanced press copy of it. It Came From Something Awful, which is basically the entire history of the 4chan phenomenon that helped to sort of propagate and spread the propaganda that propelled Trump into office. It's basically the history of the army of unfuckable hate nerds. And I didn't know so much of that shit. There's so much we don't know as grown people, you know, in this culture we live in. Like, I don't, you know, I'm not, it's not that I'm not proficient. It's just, it's not my second nature to be up to speed on. I didn't even know what all those chans were. 2chan, 4chan, 8chan. Didn't know it came from Japan. Didn't know the sort of the unfolding of that the chan universe. This isn't even Reddit, which I kind of know, but I don't spend any time on. But just the sort of nihilistic, dark hive mind of the chans. I had no idea about it. And oddly, as frightening as it is, it made me feel better to at least have a handle on what the fuck happened, what's going to continue happening, and where the conversation goes. So it's enlightening. It's not out yet, but I'll let you know when it comes out, because those two books together, Fantasyland and it Came From Something Awful, are great companions if you want to just blow your mind with dark but honest factual reporting that not a lot of hope there, but at least understanding. And sometimes that's the best you can hope for, is a bit of understanding. So I'm reading this book about the army of unfuckable hate nerds, and it's really, and I've been a little hard on the nerds, and like, I'm no jock dude, I'm just an old dude. Yeah, I guess I'm a little snotty sometimes, and I've been a little snotty to the nerds, in relation to entertainment product, in relation to Marvel movies and Game of Thrones. I've been a little snotty, though I am reframing that in a little more diplomatic way. But, I do know that maybe there's a crossover, obviously, between some of the nihilistic hate nerd army and the fantasy people. But this book is really about that lifestyle of because of the internet, that you can kind of, there's a generation of young people who were literally brought up by the internet, brought up by each other and whatever influences and sort of horrible momentums occur on these chat boards or in these platforms. And some of them are severely broken, lonely, angry, lost people, but they're not all bad. And I don't want to come off as a guy who's punching down or a bully, and like, I think about it, but like, I still have to separate in my mind, like, I'm allowed to be culturally critical of things, but do I have to sort of generalize about the people that watch them? And I think you can do that, but how is that not different than stereotyping to a certain degree? So it's a delicate balance that I'm aware of. And this stuff sort of haunts me a little bit sometimes. And just by some karmic coincidence, at the hotel I'm staying at in Madison, there's this, I guess it's a yearly thing, I didn't know anything about it, and it's called WISCON, and it's Women in Science Fiction, I think is what it stands for. But it's obviously, it's open to everybody. But these are, primarily, like a lot of them, there must have been a couple hundred, people who are involved in science fiction and fantasy, and this is their little conference. And, the place was full of these, they're sort of oddly special gifted people. There is a way to characterize nerd culture. There is a whole sort of massive bunch of communities of nerds who are going at it out there in the on the internet, in the chans, on the tumblers, all the stuff I don't really know about, but it's huge, and a lot of it has to do with living in fantasy. And they pull out sometimes. They pull out to hang out in person and talk to each other, and I guess share stories, have conferences, share art, and just share their humanity. And I just never really, this is, I guess, a fault of my own, really thought about the women. And there are a lot of them, and a lot of them were at my hotel, and it was just wild, a diverse sort of community of all kinds of people, all shapes, sizes, genders, hairs, ages. I mean, but they were all specifically on the fantasy spectrum. I will say that fantasy spectrum, not the spectrum, though there's probably an argument to be made. But it was just fascinating, and being around them all made me giddy. It was sort of elevating somehow. There's an energy to it that I just rarely experience. And it was very humanizing and very, I was happy for them, and it made me giddy. So power to you folks, to you fantasy people, primarily for getting out and engaging with each other in this sphere. That's all I'll say. That's all I'll say. I don't want to mock it because I found it incredibly endearing and amazing, and I had nothing to do with it, and I just kept my head down, and I just sort of sucked up some of that energy because it's intense, man. So, okay, anyway, Timothy Oliphant is here, and we had a nice conversation. He's a very nice guy, and I hope this sounds okay. So this is a I hope what I'm doing right now sounds okay, because in my headset, it's not great. But right now, this is me and Timothy Oliphant. He's in Deadwood, the movie, premiering this Friday, May 31st on HBO. He's a very nice guy. Enjoy.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Joy.
Lynn Sheldon just texted me a picture of you laying with the dead guy from Santa Clara.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, the director.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the fake dead guy.
Yeah, with the fake dead guy. I didn't know that was a fake dead guy.
That's just a random.
Yeah.
That's just a random.
So, and I got
thing.
A picture of you on my phone with the fake dead guy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've
things
seen that.
Get around, man.
That's a yeah. It's a small world, as they say.
Yeah,
I want to paint it.
I know those people who do. I know Tracy Katsky.
Oh, there you go. She seems to know everybody.
Yeah,
I went to a party with her once,
yeah.
And she knew everybody and everybody in comedy.
Sure, she was one of the gang.
Yeah.
Back in the day when
there
we were
go.
All starting out.
There you go.
Yeah, we had a gang.
Where was the gang in New York?
No, it was here. That gang was here.
That
it kind
gang
of
was
revolved
here?
Around Largo, the old Largo.
Okay.
On
yeah, she was telling me she and Silverman were
yep roommates.
I'm gonna say Silverman, but Sarah Silverman. She and they were roommates.
I remember that apartment.
Yeah,
well,
and
I,
that's an LA apartment.
It was an LA apartment, and the three. It was Mary Lynn Rice Cub, Sarah Silverman, and Tracy Katsky, and the place looked like a fucking Montessori school. There was guitars around. They were painting. There was.
Now, were you in New York for a while, too?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
You were in New York in the 90s.
I was in New York in the 90s for sure. Were you?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Well,
I have a vague memory of you there in the 90s.
Really?
Yes.
Well, what's your arc? Who was your crew that you started with? Who were the guys you came up with? No,
I really,
one.
I don't feel there was a crew. I don't feel like I could ever claim such a thing.
Really?
I feel like I knew a few people.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like I was.
You were
ever,
never part of a gang?
Well, there was sure, but that short-lived thing at the, you know, when I was at USC and
uh-huh.
I fell into a bad crowd there off campus.
Ooh, the bad crowd off campus.
Yeah.
That sounds promising.
Do the Crips and the Bloods enjoy when you joke as that you were part of their gang once?
Yeah.
Is that something they're like, oh, that's funny.
Do you go by Tim?
Tim's good.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. But you choose to be called Timothy on the credits.
Well, it just started out that way. I never got around to thinking it past that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pretty dramatic name somehow. Timothy Oliphant. Is
yeah.
that how you pronounce it?
And
it?
No, it's not, but it's
Oliphant.
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 Oliphant, like elephant.
I get it. What yeah. kind of name is that?
Scottish.
And do you identify as Scottish?
As opposed to
like mixed, like, you know, like do you take pride in your Scottish roots?
Yeah, it's just there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just there.
You've never tracked it?
No, but my brother did. And so I just said, oh, what do we got?
Yeah, what do you got?
Yeah.
What did you get?
We got the big revelation, although this came earlier on, was there's some Ashkenazi Jew.
You got some Jew in you.
Got some Ashkenazi Jew.
Yeah, I'm all that.
I think we're like...
I'm 99.5% Ashkenazi Jew.
Yeah, mean, I tried.
Yeah.
I tried as hard as I could, but I could only get about 15, I think.
Do you know who it was? Who's the Jew?
On my mother's side, my grandfather, his family escaped. They were Russian Jews.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Ashkenazis. It was Eastern European Russian Jews.
There you go. So it was on my mother's side.
So it's no small part. You got some.
No, I think my mother was like in the 23, mm-hmm. 20, mid, you know. Yeah, mm-hmm. That was a big deal for.
You didn't know that?
For the. No, I remember when they found out, it was a big, it was like, I don't want to paint a bad picture. It wasn't scandalous, but right. I do think it was a big deal for my mother.
Scandalous.
And her.
Get it out of me.
Exactly.
How could this happen? There's Jew in me.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think it was a big deal for my mom, my aunt, my uncle when they realized. It's kind of hard to imagine how they. I just don't think it occurred to them was part of their equation.
Yeah.
Part of the.
But you ever been?
It was a big deal for them when they found that out.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what you do with the information, but it's exciting to know what you're made of.
Sure.
Where'd you grow up, though?
I grew up in Modesto, California.
Now, wait. Okay. So Modesto, that's not. I get confused with Bakersfield, Modesto. Modesto's around here.
I like that you took the S off of Bakersfield. You put it.
Bakersfield.
Bakersfield.
Yeah.
Like, Bakersfield, you just keep going north.
Yeah. Right. And Modesto's right around here, kind of.
No, further north.
Oh, really?
Bakersfield's closer.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Modesto's by the Bay Area?
Exactly.
Right.
Hour and a half.
But it's like cowboy land?
Yep.
Like agriculture?
Yep.
Like, I think I've met people from around there. Like, there was some, was Creedence Clearwater from around there?
Yep.
Okay. I'm getting it.
You are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. That's a good thing to have.
My uncle has a great story. My late uncle, God bless him, he had a college band. Battle the Bands with Creedence.
With CCR?
Yeah, well, they were then the Pollywogs.
Pollywogs, right. Yeah, that's right.
They played, that was his claim to fame. They beat him in Battle of the Bands.
They beat him?
Yeah, they beat him. Yeah.
Oh.
Little shout out to the Pineapples.
Yeah, the Pineapples. What did he, was he the guitar player?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
College band.
And you knew him? You knew your uncle?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Did he stay playing?
He still loved to play, even though he wasn't,
didn't
go down that road, still jammed it. And they all got together a few years back, and we all played some tunes together again.
Oh, man. But what was going on? Why Modesto? What was your old man in your mom?
He worked for Gallo Wines. Oh. Started with Del Monte. I think he moved there for Del Monte and then went to work for Gallo.
So he was a food
Modesto,
guy.
Modesto, he was in wine.
Yeah.
Gallo Wine. So, I guess he was in on the production side.
Uh-huh.
But I think Del Monte brought us to Modesto and then went to work for Gallo.
Del Monte. Canned foods.
Exactly.
Ketchups.
Yeah.
Del Monte ketchups.
Pineapples.
Oh, yeah. Pineapples.
Peaches. Pineapples.
All the stuff.
I don't know. We were in...
Did you have plenty of that at home? Did it come home with your dad?
I don't remember the Del Monte. That was, a very early chapter. But I do think that was, played a part in Modesto.
What'd your mom do?
She was raising us kids.
How many?
Three.
Yeah. All boys?
All boys.
Wow. And you were just, I can't imagine, I don't know, I have no, sense of what Modesto's like. So you weren't in near show business, really.
You see American Graffiti?
Yeah.
It was like that, just uglier cars.
Oh,
so that's Modesto.
Oh, yeah.
That Lucas was.
He shot that there?
He shot it in Santa Rosa, a great part of it, but he grew up in Modesto. So it was a movie about
car culture.
Car
driving
culture.
Around.
Yeah, graffiti.
Yeah.
American Graffiti.
Sure, yeah.
We had American Graffiti nights.
Oh, you did?
And once a year.
You got to grease
Wolfman
up?
Wolfman Jack, everyone came out. Yeah.
Wolfman came?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, what's going on, Wolfman Jack?
It started out as just a thing.
Yeah.
And then it became very organized. Now I think you enter, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's still happening.
I think they still have graffiti nights in Modesto. Don't quote me on this, but last I heard it still existed, but now it's very, you can't just, when I grew up, anyone could just drive up and down the street that night. We'd all go down with lawn chairs and we'd just hang out on the...
Oh, so they bring the lowriders and the old cars and stuff?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cruise around and Chuck Berry come to town and play, that kind of stuff.
It's so weird, dude. I was thinking about that the other day about how because I play music, but I was thinking about the music my dad liked, and the music he played in the car and stuff, and it's gone. Like, there's not even oldie stations anymore. Maybe on Sirius, I guess, but you start to think about that generation, they're gone. So all that music, that whole soundtrack, most people don't know those songs. It's kind of weird, man.
My 15-year-old who's really into music knows a lot of that music.
Really? All the way back, doo-wop shit and,
Yeah.
Yeah? Oh, that's good. Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
Little Richard.
Yeah. It's quite fascinating how much it'll jump around when she's takes over the playlist in the car.
Buddy Holly.
Yeah, no, she's aware of Buddy Holly.
That's great. Like, gives me hope.
Well, it's a lot of times, I think maybe, I'm not even sure why, other than she loves music, but I think there is something about where, you know, you have these playlists now and the artists that inspire those playlists, you can sort of go pretty deep.
I guess that's right.
You can kind of go pretty deep.
So they have that era.
Yeah, you can get into anyone, and then it's very accessible to find out who inspired those artists. People love to put together playlists. The artists put together playlists. So you can listen to Anderson .Paak,
right,
be really into Anderson .Paak, and then see, inspired by,
right,
or influenced by,
right,
or their influences. So then all of a sudden you're like, well, whoever he listened to, you're listening to.
So you can open your mind.
Or you jam, like, you play, like, yeah, you go on iTunes and find, you know, all the songs that Dr. Dre was into. And
right,
half of it's all the songs he sampled, which is really old stuff.
Right.
And it just keeps going.
I guess that's true. I guess I'm showing my old manness by saying...
Look, I just know with my I mean, we're talking about teenagers, but I'm really surprised that every now and then you're like, are you playing Dionne Warwick? What's going on? Like, why are we playing this? That's, you know what I mean? She's like, oh yeah, I love this song.
It's great.
And I'm like, but why is it even in your repertoire?
And she tells you.
She's like, yeah, it's really great. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't know where it happened in history necessarily, but they enjoy the music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it all starts to, so that is one thing I find, I sort of marvel at.
Yeah, what'd you grow up with?
Now, my son does not do that.
What's he up to?
He's just listening to just straight hip hop, just, you know, it's just, but we're not as proud of him as we are his sister.
You got a troubled kid.
As he gets out there in the world, when people, should you be listening to this, when you meet my son, you think, oh yeah, this is that one.
The bad son.
Yeah, this is the bad seed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many you got, two?
We got three.
So you did three.
We did three, yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought two was plenty, but we went with a third.
Yeah, what would the third one come out? Boy, girl?
Girl.
Yeah?
That's
two girls and a boy?
Exactly.
And the youngest is in her teens?
Teens.
Oh, man. You got your hands full. How old's the son?
Well, not really.
Not yet?
We're about done.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Good luck. We're at that stage.
Take care.
Pat him on the ass and just say, go get him, champ.
Let us know if you need anything, too much.
Let us know if you need anything. Exactly.
Don't get into trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Here's our number, but your mom and I are going on a trip.
for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So the boy's the oldest?
No, he's the middle.
All right. So they're all, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And you got colleges and all that stuff.
Yeah, no, that's all happening.
Do yourself a favor and don't pay anyone to get your kid into school.
You know, I swear, those kids went to school with my kid, too. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, man.
Hilarious. Yeah, it's funny. I got a kid in college on a tennis scholarship, and it never occurred to me that she never even had to play. Fucked up. We actually did the lessons and everything.
Really?
I just wasn't thinking creatively enough.
No,
I just wasn't thinking creatively enough.
No, you didn't. None of them are in college yet, are they?
Yeah, one in college, one on the way.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you're in Medina. What kind of music were you listening to? What, like, characterize your high school years? Were you a metal guy? Were you a country guy?
I've seen Judas Priest on more than one occasion.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a tough, maybe about a decade or two ago, I really had to come to terms with, this is not good.
Just the music your whole
really
life.
It really doesn't hold up. It's really sad.
Which ones?
Name them. I mean, they're all, but.
Def Leppard.
Yeah, it's just.
Judas Priest.
But the priest,
you can still do.
I still have a little soft spot for him. Some of them I do dig.
Van Halen holds up.
Van Halen holds up in a little bit.
Yeah.
A little
AC/DC
bit.
Forever.
But see, those are kind of rooted in a little bit more rooted in some blues and stuff.
Sure.
Right? So it holds up, a little better.
Yeah.
But no, and look, some Priest tunes, I feel like, I don't care what you say. I stand by it. It's solid.
How about Iron Maiden? Were you?
KK Downing. Glenn Tipton. Start naming. I'm a big fan. Iron Maiden, not so much. I wasn't into them that much, but they were in there.
Yeah.
No, where it gets crazy is, you know, when you start throwing out, when my buddies and I are hanging out listening to Y&T. Or,
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, strong, buddy.
Yeah.
Strong.
Yeah.
You should pull it out.
Y&T?
Y&T. Yesterday and today. They're still around. NorCal band. Or, little Aldo Nova.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I listened to Billy the other night. I was texting my buddy from high school. He said he was listening to little Billy Squire.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And
that one record.
Exactly.
That one record.
Yeah.
That was a big record.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to that guy.
Don't say no. Yeah, it was cool. It was all right. Yeah, Lonely as a Night. It's solid, dude.
Yeah, it was.
Solid. there's a lot that doesn't hold up because we were listening to all that. You know, they start to, you go down the hair bands, basically.
Sure. You know? Yeah. Well, you're younger than me. How old are you?
No, I'm 50. How old are you?
55.
No, well, I'm still, you're right. I am younger.
A little bit. Yeah, you're 50?
I'm 50.
You're looking good, man. Holding up.
You know, I try to eat right and exercise. Yeah,
you do, right? Walking around without your shirt on.
I love that there was a follow-up. No, but seriously, you do, don't you?
It takes a lot, man. It takes a lot to look as good as you do at 50. You're not going to just like lay it off as a casual thing. It's work. It's work.
I appreciate it. I think we're both doing all right.
Yeah, I think so.
But there was some, you know, I also fell into that sort of new wave thing. So yeah. There was the concerts like, well, the Police hold up.
Yeah.
But if you go down the list of opening bands, Thompson Twins, who else is in there?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, you know who was in that whole thing was, so it was like English Beat.
Oh yeah, I like the English Beat. I still listen to English Beat.
Yeah.
Just Can't Stop It, that record,
yep.
Tears of a Clown.
Strong.
That's great.
The best stuff was more like the Elvis Costello.
Great.
And that sort of fun punk stuff that was happening there. Was
the pop really, punk stuff.
Yeah, it was really fun. So listening to that, like...
I still listen to that.
The Repo Man soundtrack, things
great.
Like that.
Yeah.
Those were kind of... So there's some things you kind of go... It's funny to look back and see...
It defines us.
Yeah.
It makes us feel better.
It was a huge... And... Were you like that? We were all over the map. Like, I feel like our friends, a bunch of us were all over the map.
Once I got older.
Like metalhead guys and smoking section.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
At
high school. Sure.
By the way, our smoking section was in front of the school. Like in the front. When the young kids were being dropped off, the freshmen were being dropped off by their mothers, there between the drop, getting out of that car, that Oldsmobile, and getting to the front of the, into the school, was a giant group of people in leather jackets and a huge cloud of smoke above them.
It's weird. In my high school, I remember you could smoke anywhere outside.
Oh, really?
In my
recollection. Had a section.
I mean, there was, like, just the fact that we were in high school and they just let us fucking smoke was crazy. It was crazy.
It was essentially in the parking lot. It was like where you lock up your bikes and the parking lot and the flagpole.
Yep.
And there was just everyone out there smoking.
Yeah, I remember
skaters and rock, mostly rock people and Mexican gang kind of vibe.
Skater came in. I grew up in New Mexico, so there was definitely a Chicano.
Yeah.
You know, faction.
Yeah, we had a whole lowrider. Yeah, sure. Modesto.
That's right. Same with Espanola, New Mexico. They'd come down. There was a lot of lowriders.
Yeah. No. And I used to. I loved to draw growing up, and then I was an art student in college, and so that was sort of my connection with some of those lowrider guys. They're really good. They had really good art.
Oh yeah.
So we'd hang out in art class together.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because they, you know, that lowrider culture of car culture and drawing. And,
yeah. Almost almost into tattoos almost.
Yeah, they love to do, there was like that thing of, I remember them teaching me like how to do the lettering where it looked like it was mirrored, like it looked like steel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like the 3D stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's car detailing stuff almost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I like high school, I don't know I have no sense of it, but you have kids, it must be interesting to see that because there was definitely a distinction. I, like you, it sounds, could move freely throughout most of the cliques. I was not directly identified.
I wish I was jealous of guys. There was one or two guys I remember who could do it way more seamlessly than I could. I wish I was that cool.
Yeah.
But I was able to do it a little bit.
You weren't a jock?
Well, I was a little bit of a jock, and then I was also the art guy, and I was a decent student, so I felt like I kind of had a foot in a little bit with everybody.
Right.
So I enjoyed my high school years.
I just can't believe.
But there were certain guys that were just, I was like, wow, you really are that cool.
Yeah.
You
know? I know. I had a couple guys like that. And looking back on it, I don't know how cool they were, but I think I thought they were cool.
Usually not jocks. Usually once, the guys. I remember a guy I went to high school with who was a really talented artist.
Yeah,
so talented, and then kind of a druggie, but not a deadbeat, right. But able to like just go in and out of the two, three worlds.
But he had a thing he did that you were impressed with. So yes.
He was just cool.
Yeah, those guys, and they
come
not...
hang out with us. He'd go hang out with the druggies. He'd go hang out with skateboarders. Yeah. He more than me, but my inn with some of the skateboarders was I'd go to the skateboard ramps and paint on the ramps.
Oh, yeah?
You go, come out and...
You were the guy who painted on the ramps?
Painted on the ramps.
What'd you paint on ramps?
You know, just anything that seemed kind of...
Were you a graffiti guy?
It could be any... I guess we did use spray paint and stuff. Yeah, we used spray paint, but it was more just because you could draw. Yeah. So, you know, you could...
I feel like skate culture came a little after me. You know, like it was like I just missed it. It was just starting by the time I got out of high school. I graduated high school 81.
Okay.
So it wasn't quite.
You guys weren't out stealing plywood from construction sites?
No, but it happened.
Skateboard ramps?
It happened with my brother. Like they were starting to do that. Yeah. Pools.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole thing. I was never that much of a risk taker in terms of, I just couldn't get a hold of it. Did you skate?
Oh, no, enough to kind of be able to. You know, hang around.
Right, yeah. But you couldn't compete necessarily.
No.
You had the skateboard, you had the spray paint, but you couldn't.
I could go up and down the, I could get up, but wasn't doing anything once I got up there other than just holding on.
Right.
And I skated, around. We skated around, skated in college, to class.
I was just in San Diego, dude. There's 50-year-old dudes skating around.
Everyone's skating around.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, you're going to break, dude. You break a ball.
I went up to see my kid at UC Santa Barbara the other day. Playing a tennis thing, and they got a skateboard lane. I've never seen so many girls on skateboards.
Well, now they got the scooter thing, too, that you just pick up on the street. You can just grab a scooter.
Yeah, I do that. I love those things.
Yeah, really? They got them where you live?
Yeah.
Oh.
I love them.
I don't see them around here. Maybe they'll come in time. So, all right, so you're in high school. You're kind of a jock. What's your sport?
I was a swimmer growing up. Yeah, swam. Played.
What was your stroke?
Water. I was IM, so I did a little bit of everything.
Oh.
Yeah.
And you, the medley?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I am individual medley.
I swam.
Did you swim?
Yeah, but not in high school. I was in a swim club that competed, but I was never
in Mexico.
Yeah, I had a B time in breaststroke. That's the best I could do. A B time in breaststroke. Breaststroke I could handle. Butterfly,
really?
Not so much. Backstroke, I always turned over before I hit the edge.
And that's it. Not in high school.
No, I didn't do any sports in high school.
Drugs?
No, I just, I was more of an art department kid. I was not I was not
a jock. Wait, we have this in common.
Yeah, but I was photography.
Photography?
Yeah, I did photography. So I
didn't do any sport. I felt like most people who were decent at swimming just swam in high school because
I was not good enough at it.
So you had to do, really, I thought high school teams all suck.
Yeah, but I was not competitive. I just couldn't handle it, man.
So does that mean you had to do PE in high school?
I can't remember showing up for it.
Really?
Yeah. I have no recollection of PE.
Should I circle back to the drugs question?
No, I wasn't druggy until later.
Till later.
Yeah. I dabbled
late
in high
bloomer.
School. Yeah, I dabbled in high school, but like college is
and
where
then
the
photography.
Drugs. Photography I was very into. Photography and writing and, but I was more sort of like, trying to have friends. Just trying to hang out. Drinking beers. We got our driver's license at 15. So we were out waiting in front of liquor stores at 15. Hey, dude, get us a six-pack. There was that whole thing.
We were part of that, and this is the American Graffiti reference. We were, we are the people. We are those guys who threw like a dummy in the middle of the road and gift wrapped a cinder block, during the holidays.
We did worse shit, kind of.
Worse shit, kind of.
There was a brief period there where we had a CO2-powered pellet gun.
Oh.
And we were shooting out windows.
Shooting out windows.
Because the sound of a windshield going.
That's just good, wholesome fun.
Man.
That's just good, wholesome fun.
Shatters.
Another time, isn't it?
Yeah, we used to go to the parking lot of the mall, and we'd put shopping carts in front of our cars and get them going about 50, and then let them go. Just watch them destroy themselves.
We used to go ice blocking. We'd go get blocks of ice in the middle of the night and go out to the golf course and slide down the hills on blocks of ice.
That seems a little less destructive.
Well, it's not good for the golf course.
Oh, really? And fucks it up?
Yeah, but we do that and we drink and hang out at the middle of the night until the golf course cop shows up.
That
and
guy.
Then you try to get him to chase you. And then you circle back and you try to steal that light.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you steal that light and then you get it in your car and now you drive up and down McHenry and you put that spotlight on people's cars and they think the cops.
There you go, stealing the light.
Good times.
That's it. That is good time.
Good times.
It is driving culture, though. I remember there was always that sort of cruising certain areas, driving around.
Yeah, take the fire extinguisher, go out, ask people for directions, and hit them.
Oh, that's good times.
Good times. Homeless, yeah, good wholesome
times. It's all fun until someone has a real gun.
There's you can't do any of this anymore.
Yeah, there's some real guns around. Did you have real guns in Modesto?
Well, I remember, no, I don't remember any guys, no guns at school, no guns.
Yeah, I saw some guns around.
No, I mean, I remember guys who went to school ended up in prison. So I know it went further south.
For them.
A lot of fights.
Yeah.
A lot of fights.
Yeah.
Parties, keg parties,
sure.
Fights.
Keg parties, destroying someone's house.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, and then there was that place up in the mountains where that someone would bring a keg.
And we went to Orchards and Canals.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So what
party
was
party at the Orchards.
What was the art thing? That was the first passion? That was what you were into?
Well, I just stumbled upon it. I mean, I drew growing up and then...
Where'd you get inspired to do that? Was there a role model for that? I mean, that made you... You just dug it?
I did. Although my dad is very good at drawing. He really liked to draw, as I recall. He was always kind of...
I used to do some of that.
And there's a bunch of people in the family that were good at drawing. My grandfather had this amazing painting up in his house that he did when he was a kid. So I know there's a lot of talented, you know, art people.
It's
you
exciting.
Used to do.
I did. I drew. My mother was a painter, so like I grew up with art.
Okay.
But I remember I drew a portrait of John Lennon that won some awards. So I guess I was more of broadly art department. But I didn't take classes. I took one sort of art class, but I did enter stuff into competitions, drawings and stuff, photography.
You go.
Yeah.
Did you go to college?
I did.
And studied?
English literature, film.
What happened? You didn't go into art. You were writing as well.
Though. I don't know what I was doing. Like the drawing thing, like if I locked in, I could do it, you know, but I did it for a while, but then it was like, not unlike photography, is this going to be my life? I wanted to learn a lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking in terms of what I was going to do with my life. So what did you actually pursue it into college?
I studied, I was a fine art major in college.
Where?
At USC.
Really? Did you have
like the reference
down the street?
For those of you listening,
that's a good school.
It's just over my shoulder.
Yeah,
to the right,
you can see it down right down the street.
Right down the street.
Yeah. Did you have to submit a portfolio to get in? Or?
No, USC. You did not have to submit a portfolio. A few other schools I did have to submit, but I went to USC because I was I swam, so I wanted to. I knew I was going somewhere where I could swim and. I stumbled across it really. I went to USC on a recruit trip, and I flew out and I had this in my head that I might want to be an architect.
Yeah,
architecture student.
That's a good application.
And the architecture. So I went to go meet with the dean of the architecture school, and he immediately told me I couldn't be on the swim team and still be an architecture student. It was just an impossible task.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him. I said to get upstairs the architecture school. I was like, there was down below there what looked like an art gallery and what I thought was looked like ceramics, looked like.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, that's the art department. Now, I know memory's not a reliable narrator. In my, what I recall saying was, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
You can get a degree in that?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, there's a, you know, Bachelor of Fine Arts. And I was like, can I go talk to them? He said, sure. And he walked me down. He introduced me to the dean of the art department. And I said, listen, I'm here. You know, my intention would be to swim for the school. Could I be on the swim team and also study art? And they said, yeah, we could work around it. Yeah.
Wow.
And so I went home and, Mom, Dad.
I'm going to be an artist.
Can you believe this? Well, first I felt like, again, my recollection is I came home and said, you're not going to believe this.
Yeah.
You can get a degree in art. You can get a college degree. Yeah. And they said, yeah. And I said, wait, you'll let me, you know, I can do that? And they said, sure. You know?
Wow, that's nice of them.
And I was like, oh my God. I went and dropped out of math that day. I'd already satisfied the requirements.
So
started going home early every day after that.
So were you just doing it to swag off or were you doing
it? No, I was like genuinely like, this was mind blowing.
Did you study art history and all that stuff?
Yeah, I was a BFA, you know, studio art.
Yeah.
I was all in. I mean, I slid the chips all the way in. Yeah. I loved it. You know.
Did you paint?
Painted. I was not very good at painting. Very, you know, color paint was a real challenge. Loved drawing. Yeah. Loved pencil drawing. Loved anything pretty simple and immediate. I mean, I eventually did, you know, 4 years. I did a lot of painting, but my paintings became more like drawings than paintings.
Oh, yeah?
It was like painting with acrylic, essentially. I mean, drawing with acrylic in a way.
Yeah.
And I loved sculpture.
Yeah?
I loved it, yeah.
Do you have some of your sculptures still?
I don't have not a single one.
What were you working with? Like, what
I did
were some...
a ton of ceramics.
Yeah.
And I did, you got to, BFA major, I don't know, it's not like this everywhere, but, you know, it's pretty well-rounded there, so you're doing a ton. You know, you have to take certain requirements before you sort of lock in during your senior year.
Yeah.
And then by your senior year, you're kind of doing whatever you want.
And you don't have any of the work?
I have all my pencil drawings.
Yeah.
I have all my drawings. Well, wow. I have a great deal of my drawings. I didn't keep anything. Just practical.
Yeah, sure.
What am I going to do with these fucking...
sculptures.
I'm going to haul ceramic sculptures around.
Were they just...
In my 20s when I go from... moved to New York and move there.
But I mean, were they freeform? Were they abstract? Or were they were like, figurative?
I did this... my senior exhibition was a series of pencil drawings and ceramic sculptures, and the ceramic sculptures are on the floor and pencil drawings were
on the wall,
the gallery, and they were those sort of things you see them on the side of buildings, those classic ocean drawings where you're split level, you're seen above the ocean, below the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
So the whales kind of like emerging.
Yeah.
It was like this surreal take on those things.
Yeah.
Where there was a line, they were all the drawings were different sizes, but the continuing line of the ocean.
Right. The surface.
Ran through them all.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was always above and below.
Yeah, yeah.
Different degrees of that. And the below had all these odd rock formations at times that looked almost figurative looking.
Yeah.
The ceramic sculptures mirrored those rock formations.
Wow, man. Yeah. You had full concept.
It was cool.
Yeah?
I remember it. I'm very proud of it.
Do you have photo documentation?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you do slides. Yeah. Yeah, no, I was in. I was on my way to... I was exploring, getting a master's going on, and I had every intention to continue studying
in the arts.
Oh yeah, love that was my.
So how'd you get derailed, man?
You know, you take a beat and you got a little time. You're enjoying yourself, and you think, I might give this a shot. Might give this a shot. If I'm going to try it, you should try it now.
Try acting?
To put off the midlife crisis, just give it. I tried to do. I did everything. I did stand up for a few months and a year or two. And
really?
I feel like you were there. not that I expect you to remember me. I mean, I remember you because you were in New York in the 90s.
Yeah, I definitely was.
At Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's where I was.
Come on.
I swear to God. Yeah. No, I'll tell you. See, I don't.
The Boston Comedy Club.
I think we were part of a. What did you say?
A gang.
A gang. I think we were in the same gang. No, you. So this would be 92, 93.
Definitely there. I went to San Francisco in 92 for a couple years, but you might have just caught me. I kind of hit the wall in New York, but I was definitely at the Boston.
Hit the wall in New York. Feels like that deserves a better, more explanation.
Well, I couldn't get into the bigger clubs, and I was trying to stay sober, and then I wasn't, and then it's like I couldn't get in at the Cellar. I couldn't get in at Catch. I was only working like Boston Comedy Club and the Improv, the old Improv.
Yeah, no, see, you were there. I was there doing open mic.
Yeah.
On Mondays.
Sure.
And so... Here, this is the gang. So I used to spend some time with, I remember running around with Jay Moore.
Yep.
I remember meeting Sarah Silverman.
Yep.
She was doing open mic around that time as well.
Yeah.
And Dave Attell was hosting.
Yeah. At the Cellar? Boston. Sure, yeah.
And Louis was hosting.
Yeah.
And then people, I remember all of it. I remember sitting on that back booth.
Yeah.
And
I remember before they built that back platform, like when it was just a flat room with shitty tables, and then they built that booth.
Oh, that's before. I don't remember a non-platform.
Yeah, yeah. So what?
And then Barry Katz.
Oh, yeah. You really were in it.
Never had two words meant so much. He paid for, I did that thing. I passed out the flyers. And,
out front?
You know, out front. And he would gave me time, and I'd work it up. And then he had some club on the Upper East Side, Upper West Side there, up at Columbia there for a beat.
Right, the West End?
I remember going up there.
Yeah. So yeah. You were doing it.
I was doing it, yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought, what the fuck am I doing? I got to get out of this.
But I mean, like, let me track this. So you get out of your fine arts, you got your undergraduate fine arts degree, and then you're like, I'm moving to New York?
In my senior year, so my wife and I, we met in college. So she had family in New York. So we just went to New York as soon as we got out of school just to kind of go visit.
Yeah. Early 90s?
Early 90s. So yeah, that's like 90, 91.
Yeah.
And didn't know what we were doing or what we wanted to do. We were both, it's after college trying to figure it out. But I had and we went back and forth once there. I kind of had this jumping around a little bit in order. Yeah. One, towards the end of I felt like my senior year and right when I got out, I had this idea that, well, anything you think of, just take a crack at
right.
it, just so you know.
Yeah, creatively, why not?
Yeah, just take a crack at it. So I was like, I've always wanted to try this. So get up and do it, put it together.
How were you?
It came the first, I think somewhat unusual, but I think maybe because I'd always heard like, you're just gonna bomb, just gonna bomb for a while. I felt like I had a couple shows right out of the gate that you're like, this is easy. This is great.
You're
and
that guy.
Then the bombing started.
Right, right.
And then they're like, ooh.
But you're writing jokes.
I was writing jokes, yeah. Writing jokes and I had this whole thing. Like I thought, I'm a big Steve Martin fan and he's in the art world. And I just felt like, oh, that's a,
Were you doing oddball stuff?
Yeah, I'd come out and I'd start singing If You Love Me and You Know It, Clap Your Hands. That would be like the first word out of my mouth. I'd just start singing that.
Just to get that audience participation,
It didn't matter, even if they were dead.
Yeah.
I responded the same no matter what.
Yeah.
I would just go, thank you! And I would just continue singing it with unabandoned enthusiasm no matter what the response was.
Yeah.
And I thought it was conceptually awesome. just get right to it. Let's just get right to it. I just want to know now who loves me out there. Right. I've given you nothing, but I just want to cut to it. So that was, I remember,
solid.
I remember, thank you, I appreciate the compliment, I'll take it as a genuine. I felt like I had one smart joke about art and pornography, about the difference between the two.
Yeah.
It was a ripoff of a quote from, who was the artist? Someone had, because it was in the height of, I guess it's just the end of the 80s, the art and pornography, Jesse Helms, that whole thing. And there was an artist who had a really long-winded quote about the purpose of pornography in one of those trials. And it was all about—
Wasn't Zappa?
No, it was one of the artists. It was like, if it wasn't Mapplethorpe, it was someone like that. Like, this is the purpose of pornography. It's simply to do this, titillate and blah, blah, blah. But it was very well spoken.
Right.
And then I just added, and then if in addition to that, it matches your furniture.
Yeah.
The art. That makes it. That makes it art.
Yeah.
So
that's smart. See
that? And I thought that was the closest thing I came to a smart joke.
then you go back to into it if you're happy and you know
and
it.
Then I just did,
Yeah.
MC Hammer,
impression.
I don't want to touch this.
Yeah,
You
did a. You did some.
I felt like everyone did a. It was like that.
Can't touch this.
Can't touch that. I don't want to touch it. I never wanted to touch it. Why does he keep thinking I don't want to touch it?
You did that.
It was
one,
just
huh?
that stuff. Just like that's. Well, they'll just. Well, that's a placeholder till I come up with something else smart.
So when did you know that that was not the life for you?
So I thought two things.
Yeah.
Wanting my wife and I, first of all, I saw right off the bat, oh, that's a tough schedule.
Yeah.
You're just up all night.
Yeah.
You're just up running all night.
Around.
It's awful. I also thought, I thought a couple things in no particular order. Yeah. One, there's a curse. It's a similar curse to, I imagine, other professions.
Yeah.
Acting has one, but maybe it's... There's a curse of where every conversation you start to have, you think, oh, that's a bit.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And that was... I was really scared to death of that, where I felt like...
You're completely consumed. Every conversation you had, you got to write it down.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, yeah. Yeah, good
and,
one.
Forgive me also, hanging out with comics, not the most fun.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, no, I felt like...
A rough crowd.
Well, it's just a lot of that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of...
Do you think this is funny?
Oh, no, no. Yeah, that's mine.
Yeah, that's mine.
That's mine. There's a lot of that. Yeah. I remember that.
You have a conversation with somebody, are you going to use that?
You going to use that?
Is anyone going to
use that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think Mark Maron already said he was going to use it. Yeah, no, he said it yesterday.
He's already doing something
like
that. And
then they're arguing over there. Yeah. I said that was mine. Yeah. No, we talked about it on Monday.
You're like, and then you both do it.
Oh, Jesus. So I just thought, well, first of all, I was probably scared to death of any type of success at any level.
Really?
Yeah, a little bit. And then I also think that stand-up comedy and acting... success comes with so much baggage.
Yeah.
It's not success in a lot of other fields. There's just so much else is coming with it. I was scared to death of it. I was scared to death of like, even if I become mediocre at this.
Yeah.
There's a chance I could see myself like, oh, you could get a sitcom.
Right.
You know, you start to have those conversations. Sure. Yeah, he's like this, he's likable. Sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, I felt like I saw a future where only a few years had passed and I was on a sitcom making a lot of money and had no skills whatsoever. You know, like I was like...
Practical skills, you mean, or acting skills?
I could see myself becoming successful in that world and not...
One note.
Actually be good at what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, interesting.
That's kind of scared the shit out of me.
That's interesting. So the fear was like, I could do comedy. I might not get very good at it. And I can
I won't
get
be good at comedy.
And I'll get opportunities from it.
And I'll get acting opportunities. And I won't be good at that. Acting. And I'll be done. This will all be over before I'm 30. I'll be like one of those guys where I'm like,
right.
I'm late 20s.
Yeah.
And it's done.
Yeah.
It's already done, and I'm actually not good at what I'm doing.
So from there, you said, I'm going to learn
how to act.
I'm going
to take some classes.
Yeah.
And I think I also probably saw that just, you know.
It's a rough life.
It's a rough life, and I thought, I was really worried that I was like, wow, it's going to be a very narrow.
Hmm.
And I thought, well, I think you start to see like, well, there's this other group of people that I feel maybe is a little bit more in my ballpark where, you know, you learn this craft and then you can kind of put your toe in over here and you put your toe in over there. You go do drama, you go do this, you go, you know.
Well, yeah, but that's interesting because, you know, you wanted to have some sort of skill set. Like with comedy,
yeah.
The other part of comedy is if you do get a few minutes together, you can get seen.
That's which my point. Yes.
Which is hard in acting.
Yes, and I guess at the end of the day, I didn't want to be a comic to become a actor.
Oh, yeah, that's nice of you.
Yeah.
We resent those guys.
Yeah. No, I love stand-up, and I felt like if I was going to be a stand-up, I was like, I want to be a stand-up. I want to be those people that's what you do. I have a lot of heroes in various professions where what they do is what they do.
Right.
And they do it till they're 80.
That's right.
They love doing it.
Right. The life.
And I think that I respect and love and admire stand-up comics, but I don't think that that's something I thought, oh, that's something I want to do till I'm 80.
So where'd you take classes? Where'd you start?
And then I went and studied with the late Bill Esper,
who I've
just
heard him,
passed
yeah.
away.
What was that school?
The William Esper Studios.
Yeah.
He at the time was running Rutgers school acting program out at the university, and then he had his studio in New York, and I went and knocked on his door and said, you know, I want to take acting classes.
He's a guy, like I've heard him, I can't remember who, but he's come up several times.
A lovely, wonderful guy, as good as they come, just a class guy.
And you loved it?
Remained close with, you know, over the years. Yeah, until he passed away just shortly.
Not long ago? How old? He's old,
ago.
Right?
Yeah.
Must have been
yeah, but
80s.
I saw him just a year or so ago. Whenever I go to New York, I'd go see him, check in with him. And
he was the guy. Changed your life.
He really did. Yeah, in more ways than one. Just a great guy.
Yeah?
Yeah, lovely guy.
So what did you learn? What did you do? Did you have to get into it?
Well, acting wise, he was, I didn't immediately go into his class. I showed up, I knocked on the door. I said, I'm here. I want to take classes. I have no experience. I've never been in a play.
Yeah.
I've never been in a high school play. I was an art student, but you know, I took a class as an elective. I owed a degree and I could take anything. And I took an acting 101.
At USC?
I actually took it through UC Irvine.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a blast. And I ran it by my wife. I said, you know, I might want to do this. What do you think? And she's like, Tim, just do something. I mean, Jesus, just do it, you know?
And he stayed with the same wife for all this time.
Yeah, no.
Pretty good.
Sorry, this afternoon we woke up in the same bed together.
Did your parents stay together?
No.
Hmm. No. Well, good. Good that you went the other way. Okay. You locked in.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. I locked in.
So Esper is like, you know, he took you in and that was that? And you started
took
doing
me in.
It?
I took my first year I studied with a man named Joel Rooks.
Yeah.
And then Joel only taught first year. And then I went into Bill's class the second year. It's a Meisner program. It's, you know, it's, I don't know if you're that familiar with
it. Yeah, we talk about it. I tend to talk to actors about acting because I'm acting
really?
Now. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I'm doing some acting. And it's my class.
How is it?
It's good. I'm doing all right. But there's some things that, like, my expectations are weird, though, in terms of craft. Like, I feel that, like, I'm not going deep enough, and I don't give myself credit for just being who I am, and it's going to come out anyways, but I always feel like, shouldn't I be losing myself? Shouldn't I, you know, like, you know, and then you start to realize, no, you talk to people like Jeff Daniels, it's like, you know, just know your face. You understand how your face works for those shots. You know, like, there's a million ways to come around it. And, like, there's only a rare couple people that actually physically or completely transform into other humans.
Yeah.
Everyone else is just pretending.
No, I think everyone's pretending. I don't know about it. I don't know if even those people are. I don't know about.
They got me fooled?
You know, what are they doing? I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, they're just playing dress up and saying the lines
but
people
like
told
you,
them to say.
It was a long time before you really broke in a way, right? I mean,
well,
you worked.
Yeah, I was a one step forward, two steps back kind of deal.
Yeah?
Yeah, you know, so you'd have a big thing and then I'd say, Jesus, woo.
Did you
slow up everybody.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's good.
Did you start with theater?
I did some theater in New York, out, and then, but I got, I was, after I went and studied in New York and I studied for 2 years and I was, best of both worlds, probably. I had success right out of the gate.
On
got
television?
Jobs, both, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right out of the bat. You know, just got first year.
Got a good look. That's why you got a good look, fella.
Well.
You fit on screen.
You fit on screen. Everybody fits on screen. You just gotta find, where you kind of fit in, I guess.
Did you, were you conscious of that?
Which part?
That you had to find where you fit in? I mean, it seems like you did
That took me a while, but yeah, you kind of figure out, that took me a long time, I mean, to some degree.
So it
took me a long, long time to be like, no, that's not what I do. I don't fit in there.
You know, right.
That's not a good.
And you were in that,
knowing
that
movie. How to cast yourself is probably a pretty good skill to have.
But you were in like that big movie with Jay Moore and like
that. So that was right out of, that was early on. That was
Go.
Late 90s, yeah.
That was a big movie. So that's sort
cool
of the
film.
Generation you come from.
I mean, when I was starting off starting out in New York, the people that, so Ethan Hawke and Mark Ruffalo and I was just, you know, enamored by them. That was the gang. And they, so that whole same generation, but they were all working because I didn't start till my 20s. So when I got there, there were a lot of people already in their 20s that were well on their way. And you know, I met them along the way. So I knew all of those people, but it took me years and years and years to sort of be part of that conversation.
Right. And when you say two steps forward, one step back, I mean, what were the moments where you had to reel something in or you had to make different choices? Like, how far did that fear of success take you?
Oh, it took forever. I mean, I felt like it took forever. I think it was terrifying, you know. So it, like a movie like Go, you just felt like, Jesus Christ, we're about to be, you know, shot out of a cannon.
Right.
And you follow it up with something that, like, no one's going to see this.
And you know that.
I think so. You know, I don't know how conscious as I was along the way, but looking back, you're like, well, what were you thinking? I've even seen things that I was in right around that time within a few years of that.
Like the Broken Hearts Club?
And yeah, I was like, who's going to go to this movie about a bunch of gay guys in West Hollywood? Guess what?
Didn't no one went to see it?
No, and then like there were opportunities during that time that were clearly huge opportunities. And I was like, no way, no way.
You didn't do them?
Well, some I just wouldn't do.
But you went with Rockstar, which was another.
But then there was, you see, it's one of these things. After a certain point, you're like, okay, so two things are happening a lot of times. One, you're either passing on huge opportunities because you're just like, this is stupid and I'm going to be famous for something stupid, and that's what you've convinced yourself of. Which,
wow.
Who gives a shit?
No one does that anymore.
I know, I should. Well, what was I even thinking? I should have been famous for something stupid. You can figure it out as
work
you go.
From there.
Exactly. Or I would just, you know, really fuck up a great opportunity, like an audition. I felt like I would get really tight at opportunities where you're like, God, what was wrong with you? That's a perfect part for you. You should have
and
fucking
blew it.
And you blew it. Just got, you know, just nervous.
Are there movies that you regret turning down?
No. Not that I can think of.
No.
No. Because, you know, usually the ones that you turn down.
Yeah.
There's none that I've turned down that you're like, oh my God, what a great movie.
Right.
Most of them I haven't even seen.
You've done a lot of movies, dude.
But see, then what happens is, this is the joke I remember doing, is that then you end up basically taking apart a small part for less money in an equally stupid film that you're like, what's the point of this? Why pass on the lead role in that film to end up being a supporting role in that guy's film, next film, who's now a huge fucking movie star because he did the dumb one. And so now you're broke and you're in shitty movies because you need the work. So you're like, this is not working out. This plan, we got to change this.
Yeah, well, you made some mistakes.
I don't know if they're mistakes or not. They are what they are. Yeah. You know, it's part of the trip. I got lucky in a way. I've never had to deal with any of the
failing on a big scale.
Or success on a big scale.
Right.
I'm the same way.
You just keep pushing, and at some point you realize, like, well, there's no turning back now. So, you know, I'm going to have to figure it out.
Exactly. I have no other skills.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then you just hope for the best.
You're like, well, honey, if this doesn't work out, there's always those ceramic sculptures. Yeah. What did I do with those?
Oh, fuck.
Oh, God damn it.
I threw them away.
I didn't have room for them.
Maybe I can redo it.
Yeah.
So that's sort of fascinating to me in that, you know, that you're, after years, really, you know, what really put you on the radar was Deadwood, right?
I mean, it certainly helped along the way. I don't feel like there was ever one thing that, I don't feel like that's any more significant than Go or Scream 2. Well, significant in that it was an amazing.
It's a
thing that keeps giving, and it's
a lot more screen time, though. I mean,
it was the first lead role. It was like a leading role,
and you could dig into it because, like, you know, you had Milch, who's a genius, and you had this incredible landscape, and you know, you could do some real character work and tell a huge arc of a story.
Yeah, yeah, no, that was a good gig.
And you're in the Wild West,
and it was one of those gigs that just keeps giving. You know,
well, that's what you did, got the movie now, right?
I mean, it keeps giving in terms of
people knowing who you are.
No, I mean, it keeps giving in that the things I learned on that in that time frame is something that I draw from all the time.
Like what?
You name it. I mean, I worked with David, so working with David Milch, he's now a voice in my head that I hear on every set I've been to since.
Saying what?
Saying that there's possibilities here that perhaps are worth exploring, that there's opportunities here, there's that the roadblock here in front of you is actually an opportunity, that there's an idea available that, you know, if you think that what you're talking about at craft service. It was maybe more connected to the work than you would otherwise had thought of.
I saw
a way of working.
Uh-huh.
I saw a way of approaching the work.
That was more creative in a way, or more freeing?
It was inspiring. It was all those things. It was creative, but it was that, in the simplest terms, it was seeing someone who, I imagine it's a little bit like what you are talking about with your own work. It's someone who did something very simple. They did all the homework. Uh-huh. They exhausted all the research and they put their heart and soul into the piece, and then they showed up and they were willing to just throw it all out the window and just go with what was the inspiration in front of them.
Huh.
And it was a way of, I mean, he was the writer and the storyteller. He was the storyteller, but he worked in a way that I thought, that's what I want. That's what I'm looking for. And I'd seen it in along the way. I don't know about you, but along the way, you see things.
Yeah.
In any kind of craft, you see Dave Attell
right.
at Boston Comedy.
Sure.
And you think,
oh my God,
what he's doing there. How can I, even if I don't pursue stand up, how can I take that and bottle it and take it with me to the next thing? That willingness to just
push the envelope.
Yeah, just say, you know, I'm just going to trust that just because this is of interest to me, the willingness to fail.
Right.
The willingness to clearly spend a lot of time thinking about what he's been thinking about.
Right.
And then throw it, seemingly just fucking throw it against the wall.
Yeah.
And see if anyone else out there feels the same.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like something that's quite beautiful and simple, but hard to trust.
Right, for sure.
And I remember showing up on, I did a scene in a Danny Boyle movie called Life Less Ordinary. And my scene essentially was cut from the film. I'm in there for seconds, but I shot.
That's why I could never be an actor for a job.
But you know what? It didn't matter. I spent a day with Holly Hunter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that day made an impression on me. It was the first time working on film where I watched someone, where I watched an actor work in a way where I thought, how do you do that? How do you do? It was that thing. It was a. She clearly knew the scene inside and out from every direction, and yet I was standing in front of her, and the camera's on her, and you know, the wind picks up, and she turns her face into the wind, and like turns away from camera and lets the wind blow on her face while she's talking, and then turns back to me, and I'm like, you know, she's fucking up her take,
right?
And then I'm like, wait a minute. That's not what's happening here. What's happening here is watching this woman who's just in the moment and so out of her head that she's just willing to go with, you know, if someone makes a sound off camera, she turns and stares at them while she's still talking to me. And I'm like, oh, man, she's just...
In it.
In it.
Yeah.
She doesn't... You know, there's this... I remember hearing this phrase once. I think it was Pacino on that movie where he's looking for Richard, where he says something like, you know, every take's a rehearsal. And I remember when I heard it, I thought, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
If you could work that way, every take's a rehearsal. But to actually work that way, it's really frightening.
Sure.
Like, you know, you're trying so hard to get it right.
Right.
So anyway, I'm babbling, but, you know, along the way you saw that. So working on Deadwood, working with Milch, and then working with the actors that were on that set that were just, you know, masters at their craft.
Yeah.
It's a job that keeps on giving.
I get it. Yeah, right? because it's you know, if you stay open, it's always surprising.
Yeah, it's because you know going forward now, those are the people you want to be having a conversation with.
Yeah.
So no matter who you're working with at the time, you're like, yeah, but I'm having a conversation with these people I've met along the way.
Right.
And they've now given me permission to do this.
Yeah.
This way.
Yeah, and you're always sort of learning and expanding. And if you're working with great actors, then all of a sudden you're like, it's so wild. They just up your game, dude.
I went to the season one. I went to the Deadwood premiere.
Yeah.
And to the, you know, the wrap party.
Uh-huh.
And they showed the outtakes.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all in this thing and we're all doing all this serious, crazy Shakespearean poetry shit. And I realized I'm not in a lot of these outtakes. I realized... these other guys are having way more fun at work. And I went to our rap party for the Deadwood movie a few months ago. Yeah. And God damn, if I wasn't all through that fucking outtake gag reel.
Oh, good.
And I thought to myself, ah, I must be really good in this movie.
Or at least you're having fun.
I've clearly gotten so much better at my job. If this is any indication how much better of an actor I've become, this is a good sign. Yeah, just having way more fun.
Well, I think that is a lot of it is relaxing into it. Because I've, like, because, you know, I had to learn on the job for the most part by doing my little show on IFC.
Yeah.
And I knew going in as a comic from watching other comics that you're going to be self-conscious. You're going to be stiff. You're not going to know how to really be on screen, but you're just going to have to take the hit and do it.
Yes.
And
what's the hardest transition? I have a theory about this. What is the hardest thing about stand-up versus acting?
Well, I mean...
Meaning, where does one not help the other one? Or does it...
Well, there's a couple things. Like, with stand-up, you're in complete control of what you're doing. Like, you're deciding what you say.
Taking this way, taking that way.
Yeah. Well, yeah, also, this is my material, and this is who I am. But what I noticed, not so much for myself, but I think it happens... I realize it probably happens with actors all the time, is that stand-ups, without knowing it, are completely sort of in their head or self-conscious. And, you know, it's instinctual. It's not, you can't sit there while you're doing it and go like, I'm too much in my head. Because even when you're really doing a good job acting, you have those takes where you're like, I wasn't in that one. And that's the one the director goes, that was great. And you're
that's the trick, isn't it?
Yeah.
See, I'm aware of this. This is the biggest, to me, I'm always fascinated by watching stand-ups who become actors. Because I think the hardest thing is to get out of your head.
Well, a lot of my stuff is generated from my head, but the one thing I've always done that is unlike a lot of other comics is that most of my writing happens live. So, like, I don't write jokes down.
Right.
I'm going to riff.
Right.
So my immediate creative process is in conversation with the audience. It's not like I'm going to try this
out. Well, that's where it feels like it lends itself, right?
Yes,
because
if you can do that.
Because any great stand-up is totally dialed into the audience and they're riding it like a wave and they're taking their cues from the audience. They know when to shift and when to, right? Because,
right, you do.
Because to not listen to the audience is going to be a total failure. They're your acting partner.
Or listen to other people. But a lot of guys don't do that. You know, like it is about being present and then just being comfortable in your body. That's something you just got to, it's just going to take time.
Oh, that's curious. I hadn't even thought about it.
But because, like, I think my primary concern was, like, when I first started doing my show, I was like, what do I do with my hands? You know, like, how do hands work, you know, as an actor? Should I be thinking about my hands? Like, I never really thought about my hands, but now I'm thinking about my hands.
Yeah. Well, see, already that's death.
Right, it is, but...
Do you ever play that game where you just think about the whoever you're in the scene with? Just, what are they doing with their hands?
Well, sometimes with doing scenes, as I got better at it, you know, because by the last season of my show, I was like, all right, I'm comfortable on screen. It's also a matter, and I know you do it too, because watching you, is that... The thing about comedy is you're timing based on laughs.
Yeah.
And in acting, you have to self-generate your timing, but there is a timing to it.
There is a tone, yes.
And you've got to take that time.
Well, yes, game where you're trying to, you're being funny, but at the same time, you have to pretend you're not being funny, right?
There's also sort of like letting moments, like when you're in a scene, sort of go like, all right, I'm gonna go ahead and walk away now, but I'm going to take this much time to do it. And you're sort of, it becomes organic.
Yes, it does.
Right.
But do you play, so here's the game I feel like I've been playing the last more or less 10 years.
Yeah.
Feels like. I feel like I don't know if I started playing it before. My favorite game to play is the goal of the game is to try to remember everything that everybody else did. And not be aware of anything you did.
Interesting.
And that's that is my feel like the pursuit of that has become
an
obsession.
How does that manifest itself? What do you mean everything they did? In the scene or?
Exactly. So like now, right?
Yeah.
You and I are having this conversation.
Right.
The idea that that I'm just, that let's say we're going to, let's just talk for one more minute.
Yeah.
And in that minute, my whole goal
right.
is to remember everything you did.
So you're not thinking about you.
No, no, really I'm seeing everything yeah. that's going on with you. Right. I see everything with you, your eyebrows, you're getting excited, you're toning it down,
sure,
you're nodding your head a little bit, that moment where you nodded your head there.
Right. Yeah.
I remember, and then all of a sudden you did that thing. Yeah. I love that. You did that. That was great.
So you do
so
that.
When they call cut, I'm like, I remember everything Mark did.
Yeah.
I'm like, so that was a good take.
Right.
We can move on.
Because you were not self-conscious.
I don't remember anything I did.
Yeah.
I just remember everything Mark did, and I loved all of it.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a good exercise.
The same game, if the camera's on me, I try to put it on you.
Okay.
This is your take, it's not my take.
Right.
I'm just dialed into you.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, how's he doing?
Yeah, yeah. I've had moments where I'm watching, when I'm acting with somebody that's great, you know, like Brie or like Betty Gilpin or somebody, and I'm just like, oh my God, she's really doing it.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what you want to be.
It is.
That's the game.
Sometimes I feel like I'm not in it if I'm doing that. I mean, I'm listening, but like, and sometimes like I get so moved by someone else's performance and I know that it's not, I shouldn't be like tearing up or anything.
No.
But like—
Isn't that the best?
Yeah.
But don't you, isn't that the most fun about, it's the saddest thing about off-camera work, I find, you know, is that, I hate to admit it, but when the camera's on the other person, I'm like, wow, look at them do their thing.
They're really doing it.
And I'm like, fuck, this is what I should be doing. This is where you want to be. Why am I not here?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
To me, that's like heaven. That's just where you want
to
live.
Yeah. I mean, I have had to learn how to have fun. Or I acknowledge that, you know, because when you're shooting a TV show, you're so much coverage and there's so many takes that like it's hard to at some point not go like, oh God.
Of course not.
Yeah.
No, I mean no. That's well, no, I'm listen, it's all in my book on acting. Don't be afraid to bitch and other tips for young actors. What the fuck? How many ways are you gonna cover this fucking thing?
Yeah.
Let me tell you something, asshole. The gun can only go off once. So you can cover it from over there, you can cover it from over there, you can get a nice shot from down here, be underneath the horse's dick, up to the gun, but you're going to have to pick one. So why not just commit now and we can all go home early?
It took me a long time to realize that.
Oh my God.
That really-
It's so
like,
hard not to be a-
That you're shooting around all this stuff, but in the story, like you only use one.
You can only use one. You know why they're doing that? This is the downside of television.
What?
Well, directors show up without a point of view.
Mm.
They're just here to service the writer, and so they're just going to cover their ass.
Right.
They're going to cover it. They'll figure it out in post.
Right.
That's the
difference between film and TV?
Not a lot of film anymore, but certain filmmakers just know this shot is for that moment.
You got to have the coverage.
I mean.
Or choices.
Sounds pretentious, but you know, having just done the worked with Quentin Tarantino for a few weeks, like this shot is for this moment. This is the shot, and this is the reason why we're doing this shot, because this is the story we're telling.
Yeah.
We're not covering it from every fucking, we're not covering it from down the hall and down the block, and we're not, there's no three cameras, it's just one camera, and this is the shot.
Yeah.
Because this is the story, and he's the storyteller, and he's telling it through images. When you get on a television set, you know, God bless them, but they're just going to cover their ass. We're going to start off wide, we're going to push in. The upside in television is you've given the writer all the power, which you know, God bless them, they famously have constantly been, you know, first thing you do is fire the writer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Spend more money on hair to fix the film than you will on getting a good writer. But, so the upside is you gave the storyteller and the writer some power. The downside I felt like a lot oftentimes is you get a director who is going through the motions as opposed to owning it.
Right.
Because it's not their thing.
Right.
And so they're going to show off some skill and some flash, but they're not going to commit the way they
might.
To a point of view.
Unless it's theirs, which is rare.
And because it doesn't feel like theirs, and they don't want to rock the boat.
So unless they were the first ones out.
They
want
to be asked back. They want to be easy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're like, hey, we're here.
But I find that some directors do have some way, because I've used, like when we were shooting my little show, you know, like Bobcat would come in, Goldthwait.
Yeah.
And, you know, my sensibility is close to his, but he definitely could feel a tone. I think that, like, someone like Lynn, because she makes so many movies, she's good with actors, and she's capable of finding that tone. But then there are the cats that are just sort of like, just shoot it out. You know, it's just...
Well, I'm not saying they're not... They're very good. Yeah. I mean, it's a wonderful... One of my favorite things about television is having all these different voices and different right. people come in and the opportunity to have a dialogue with them. And it's an endless education
yeah.
And seeing strengths and weaknesses. What I thought sometimes can be frustrating is, let's say I'm struggling with a scene and me, maybe the writer and I both we're working on it.
Right.
And something's not working. I hate not being able to go. I hate going to the director of that particular episode and saying, let me ask you a question. What do you think of that sequence there? And they're like, yeah, it's fine.
And you know, it's
like,
not.
I'm like, no, it's not fine. It doesn't yeah. fucking work.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, and I'm like, yeah, but what do you think? And they're right. like, you know, my job is not really, you know, my job is to shoot the scene that they wrote.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, then go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
You just leave.
Yeah.
Give me the cameras, put them over here, put them over there. Where do you want to put them? You want them over there? You can go home now. you know what I mean, right?
Sure. They just want to get through the day. Yeah, they're and like, shoot it
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I don't yeah. want to cause a bunch of problems and they'll never have me back. Well, there's a season two.
Yeah, you know right, mean? Exactly.
They want to be like, hey, that guy was great. He was nice. And this episode turned out fine.
So when you shot the Deadwood movie, was it equal as rewarding? Was Milch, you know, who directed it?
Lovely guy, Dan Minahan.
Nice to get back into the character. And,
you know, I didn't think it was going to be, but I did like it. I really had a great time.
That's good.
I enjoyed it. It was a very rewarding experience. And it was a funny, weird task.
I'm excited about it. And well, also, like, the other thing I noticed, what I was going to say at the beginning about Justified, that I realized was like, yeah, I'm watching them and I'm like, I'm into it. But I realized, like, it's really a classic, you know, cop show. Like from the 70s or 80s, like, you know, you had, it was like, yeah. it reminded me of McCloud.
The first season especially
yeah.
started out that way. It got less so as it went.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It gets a little more like
yeah, it gets more serialized.
Yeah.
In the beginning, it was sort of a...
Like almost like a
lot of things. We're figuring it out as we went.
Yeah, but like it just felt like wrestling. That. Like this is that guy, kind of, he's not a fish out of water, but he's a fish back home. He doesn't want to be back home.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you kind of move through that world.
Yep.
It was like Beretta or any of those shows.
Yeah, it was like Rockford Files.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's sort of cool.
Yeah, no, I know.
Because it worked, right? That. People dug the show.
Yeah, well, and I think they especially dug the show.
It got deeper, yeah.
As it went, yeah.
With Weird Walton. He's great, huh?
What a good actor.
I'm a big fan of his, and because he's like, that thing he did in Vice Principals, I don't even know what that was, but it was something fucking, it was something else, man.
He commits.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do. You got to commit.
Good talking to you, man.
Hey, thank you. I likewise, I appreciate the invitation.
I'm glad we did it. You got to go all the way back to the West Side now? This is the perfect time of day to do something on this side.
You trying to end it on a sour note?
No.
So now you got to go back
impressed.
And drive home? You're just going to stay here?
Yeah.
How about I put it this way? So you gotta just keep living here?
I am.
Okay. I'm gonna drive out of here.
What my point was is like, because I live on the East Side, like I thought to myself, like, he picked the right time to come. Because when you got to travel from where you are or where I am,
yeah.
If you've got like a 10 a.m. or a 4 to 5 a.m. meeting or something, it's
No,
I'm not doing it.
No, don't do it.
I'm not going over there. I'm not going to be the last meeting of the day coming to fucking from the East Side. It's not, I don't need the part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See, you figured it out.
I figured out show business.
You clearly figured it out. Look at this.
I'm in my house.
I can't get over that this is show business.
Yeah, I know. It was funny at the beginning when we started doing this like 10 years ago or whatever, when I was at the old house, people would come like, where the fuck am I? Like, because I was in Highland Park and these like big stars would come and they're like, what is this? I'm like, this is the future, dude. This is where it's at. It's a good time
to
do it.
Who would have thunk?
Certainly not me. You know, it was the one part, it changed my life, and it was the one time in my life I somehow just happened into some good cosmic timing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a skill set that applied, but like somehow I made it. It was just one of those things you have no control over. You know, I had no anticipation or expectation.
I get it. No, it's the best. Oftentimes those are the best things. It still kills me that we're the only two people in this building.
We are, as I hope.
Well,
let's go downstairs.
That's true. We should go down.
Thanks, man.
All right, man. Pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, that was me and Timothy Oliphant back home
in my house. I'm still in Madison. I hope this sounded okay. Okay, no music. I'm not home. Boomer lives!
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.